Hi everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the SmackDown Summary. This is number 6 in the critically acclaimed series, and by critically acclaimed, I mean people on Twitter said they enjoyed it. That is critically acclaimed. I'm Kenny McIntosh. I am a Scotsman who enjoys long walks in the park, the theatre and professional wrestling, and I'm joined by Sondra, who loves to debate, talk Chinese foreign policy, eat food and talk about professional wrestling. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. Yeah, that about sums it up.
It does.
To be fair, like the debate topic, the national debate topic for the United States right now is, you know, economic and or diplomatic engagement with China, which is why I'm interested in Chinese foreign policy. I have a lot to learn in a very short period of time so that I can coach the children of the world. And it's a little overwhelming.
Like, I'm one of the only people on Inside the Ropes who is not coaching children. Is this like a should I try and take my wisdom to the children?
I don't know if that would be a good idea.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be.
McCutcheon isn't coaching children either. I think it's just Robert.
That's good for the human race, really,
isn't
it?
I think so.
I mean, if I went to work, I'd be like, listen, kids, sometimes when you're angry, you just need to shout cunt a couple of times. And it'll all be better.
And while that's true, the educational system might frown upon that advice.
I always found it, this is a really too deep thing to say, but
but you're gonna say it anyway.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it anyway. I always enjoyed the irony of, like, you know, priests and stuff saying, like, you know, you cannot swear, but we can fuck children, because that's okay.
They never said, but we can fuck children. They just fucked the children in private.
But that's what I mean. Like, that is by far a worse thing to do.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I trust somebody who swears far more than I trust somebody who pretends to be a complete goody two shoes. Because then, I'm not saying they all fuck children, but what I'm saying is, the people who are goody two shoes and don't just kind of let out at some point in their lives, there's something else going on. Mark my words. That's your life lesson for today, folks.
Maybe you should teach. No, you shouldn't teach children. Absolutely not. That is a terrible, terrible idea.
Oh, God. Can you, like, to be fair?
I can't imagine, and I don't think it would be a good idea.
To really be fair, a couple of times I've sat with the bosses at What Culture and been like, why does wrestle culture need to be PG?
I mean, I assume you doing shows for What Culture is basically like teaching children about wrestling, right?
I'm not doing that, Sondra. You try and get me into trouble. I am a company man.
Yeah, an Inside the Ropes company man.
I never said what company. Anyway, we're here to talk
SmackDown!
We're here to talk about the SmackDown summary. SmackDown live last night from Dallas, Texas at the American Airlines Center, home of WrestleMania weekend from this past year. But luckily, WWE's programming has got better.
Yes.
So,
WrestleMania was the roadblock. I stand by it.
Do you know what? And I've said this. I was saying this today to somebody. I cannot remember the last time that WWE had a bad WrestleMania that then resulted in a tremendous sort of April to August period.
I really feel like we just had to get WrestleMania out of the way, right? And it's weird because I remember saying that before WrestleMania, that WrestleMania just felt like it was halting progress, right? And
yep.
Then it turned out to be true because they called, I mean, obviously I'm going to be biased because they called up so many people from NXT that I've loved for so long. And, you know, I'm going to be more invested in those people because I followed their journey and I've, you know, been very invested in them. But I feel like the storytelling has been better. And I feel like they were kind of backed into a corner with injuries and stuff. And they realized, oh, maybe we should tell some stories and maybe we should improve our writing and maybe we should improve our shows. And I feel like it's really happened. And I mean, Raw and SmackDown have both been good. I personally enjoyed SmackDown a little bit more again this week. And I'm trying to figure out if that's because of brand loyalty, just because I am on the SmackDown summary, or if it's because of the show, but I think it might be a little bit of both. Like, I'm really enjoying what SmackDown's doing right now, even though this episode wasn't as great for me as some of the ones previously. Like, I'd say last week's was better than this week, but this week was by no means bad. I do have some criticisms. I definitely do. But I'm still really enjoying what they're doing, and I'm looking forward to Backlash.
Yeah, 100%. I think Raw edged it a little bit for me this week, but it wasn't a far, like, it wasn't very far apart.
You know, Raw had a bigger moment, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to David, I'm going to break the fourth wall here, because we can do this in Inside the Ropes.
Mm-hmm.
We will do the SmackDown summary, but before we do that, we're going to do something else.
Okay, I don't know about this, so I don't know what's going on.
Sondra, the floor is yours to discuss for however long you would want the debut of Bayley on Monday Night Raw for the last 2 weeks.
Really? I get to talk about Bayley?
On you go.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. The debut of Bayley is really interesting to me, right? Like, it's really complex. It makes sense. And I think I said even before Bayley debuted that Bayley felt like she belonged on Raw more than she belonged on SmackDown. I did say that, right? I'm not just making that up.
No, yeah, because we talked about it and we agreed that although the division of SmackDown perhaps needs her more, we feel like with the people on Raw, she would fit there more, and she probably needs to be there more than SmackDown needs her.
Okay. And sometimes I forget what I've said publicly and what I've said, like, just privately in conversation to you. So I just wanted you to back me up on that in case.
Yeah, you did. You definitely did say a variation of that publicly.
Okay, excellent. And I really feel like Bayley debuting on Raw was the right call. Much as it pains me, much as I'm holding my hands over my heart right now in my home, like, it makes me sad that I don't get to talk about Bayley because she's not on my show, but I'm getting to talk about her now, which is really exciting. I think her debut was handled in a great way, actually. Like, I mean, I could try and nitpick it and say the Bayley is all about being an underdog and getting placed into the title picture right away. It doesn't make sense for Bayley, but the way they're handling it and the way they're telling the story does actually make sense to me, because Bayley and Charlotte have a history. Bayley and Charlotte have a big history. Like, Bayley versus Charlotte was the big feud before Bayley versus Sasha was the big feud, right? Like, Bayley versus Charlotte was a big, big deal. And I've seen some Bayley versus Charlotte matches that are amazing, like at the Takeover without a modifier, right? Like, that was Bayley versus Charlotte. Not at the Takeover without a modifier. It was at Takeover Fatal 4-Way.
What did you think about Mick Foley being the one to bring her out? How did that feel
Honestly,
for you?
Honestly, it makes sense to me. Because Mick Foley, we've seen behind the scenes and on Facebook and on Twitter and on everything, like, he's been such a proponent of women's wrestling, and especially the NXT women's division. And I kind of like it. I mean, I don't know if you guys were critical of it or if I've heard it elsewhere that people are critical of Mick Foley being so involved in the women's stories and whatnot, but it made a lot of sense to me for Mick Foley to be the one to bring Bayley out. It doesn't, maybe it's just because it's an instance where Stephanie McMahon is not declaring herself the women's division like she did on Raw last night, or two mm-hmm. nights ago, and declaring herself the women's revolution and taking credit for all of the women and everything they do, right? Like, it's nice to hear Mick Foley, who's actually been an advocate of the women and who's actually really been advocating for these women for so long. It's nice to see him be the one to say, no, as the general manager who's trying to manage generally, I'm going to bring in the hottest free agent in the women's division, right? And I'm going to bring her in and I'm going to, you know, place her against you. And the way they played it was Charlotte saying, there's no one left to face me. You know, I broke Sasha. There's no one left here. And if you look at the Raw roster without Bayley, she's absolutely correct. But if you look at the Raw roster with Bayley, Bayley's a formidable foe to Charlotte. Do I think she should win right away? No, because that's not Bayley, right? Like, that's not Bayley's story. That's not how Bayley works. Bayley needs to work from behind. And, you know, she said as much in her interview with Chris Jericho. She said she'd rather start from the bottom. Like,
It's funny because Dave and I did discuss this, and obviously people who have listened to the Raw Rundown, like, we were talking about the fact that she's obviously going to probably be facing Charlotte at Clash of the Champions.
I think that's sad, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, we were saying, like, the worst thing they could do is put the belt on her.
Yeah, absolutely. Point.
Because we were saying, like, I don't even know if I want the belt to go on her at WrestleMania. Because I feel like it's just... You said something a while ago about something that kind of got me thinking. And you were talking about NXT and how sometimes it goes takeover to takeover and you really don't enjoy that.
No, I hate that a lot because it feels like it makes everything in the middle feel inconsequential or like it doesn't matter. And this is going to sound really mean, but like people like you tend to think takeover to takeover and then everything in the middle, you just kind of skip over, right? And I don't mean that as a dig. It's just like that's the way they structure their programming.
Yeah, they make it that way.
You don't need to watch anything else. And that's what frustrates me as a diehard. Like, I do watch week to week and I want everything that I watch and everything that I invest so much time and effort and emotion in. I want everything to matter.
Well, I think that's for me, it's like that's where, you know, everybody's almost sort of going, okay, Bayley will win the title at WrestleMania. That's what's going to happen. And it's like, I don't know. Like, does she need to win it at WrestleMania?
Didn't we all think before WrestleMania that Sasha was going to win at WrestleMania? Obviously.
True.
And that didn't happen, and it turned out to be the right decision.
Talk about the second week, Bayley with the New Day.
That was beautiful, wasn't it?
I was watching it and I was just going, I just can't imagine Sandra right now. Like, I just can't imagine now.
I just had a big old grin on my face the whole time, right? Like, because Bayley coming in, I want to talk about her and Mick Foley a little bit more just because she got to do a cheap pop with Mick Foley, right? Like, and at her core, at her heart, Bayley is a wrestling fan. Like, when Bayley came into NXT, Bayley was a super fan who didn't want to hit Alicia Fox in their first televised match because she didn't want to hit someone who had been a Divas champion. Like, that's the Bayley that I've seen grow and change and come up from NXT. And, you know, at her core, she is still such a fan of wrestling and the fan of things that she watched as a child. And you can see for Bayley to get to interact with Mick Foley on that level, and for Mick Foley, one of her heroes, to bring her in to Raw and bring her onto the main roster and welcome her into the WWE, really. Like, for her to get to say, you know, right here in wherever they were, because I don't actually remember. Were they in Brooklyn at that point? Was that?
Yes.
Like right here in Brooklyn, New York. Not only is that just like a cheap pop because Mick Foley's standing right there, but that's a cheap pop and that's like a huge moment for Bayley, the character, and the woman behind her, right? Like, because she is such a wrestling super fan, and I love when we get to see that brought out. Like, I mean, and then you see her interacting with the New Day. She's a wrestling super fan. She's going to be a wrestling super fan of the New Day, too. So for her to get to, like, hang out with the New Day, and even though I really, really, really hate the "Hey, we want some Bayley" chant, because I just really hate it a lot, because Full Sail totally overplayed it. They sort of appropriated it from the New Day thing, and like, also, I just don't like the implications of it being about a woman when the original lyrics are, "Hey, we want some pussy." And like, there's a lot that goes into that. And I just really don't like that chant. But it looked like it was kind of fun for her to participate in it. And it was the New Day saying like, "Hey, yeah, you can be welcome in our group." And also the really cool thing about that was that when Dana Brooke came in and then brought in the storyline with Dana Brooke and Charlotte versus Bayley, and saying that she had been talking to Gallows and Anderson, that means that the men are acknowledging that the storylines of the women are existing concurrently, right? So you're creating a fully formed world, and you're creating a world where all of the stories are existing at the same time and can interact. So you have Dana Brooke and Gallows and Anderson versus the New Day and Bayley in a mixed tag where Bayley got to dropkick a man in the corner. Like, they actually got to interact like people. Like, their stories are happening at the same time. And an interconnected world is one of the things I ask for most in wrestling. You know this, having talked to me for years and like nodding and be like, "Okay, Sandra, yeah, I understand." But we saw another example of it on Raw, and that was really, really cool and really, really powerful for me. So I got super excited. And plus, I apologize that I don't remember who it was on Twitter that pointed this out, but they were putting Bayley with the New Day, who are guys who will appeal to a similar type of audience because they're very kid-friendly, they're very happy, they're very like bright colors, that kind of thing. And that's the same type of audience that Bayley's going to appeal to mostly. Like, I think that Bayley appeals to a widespread audience. I think the New Day appeals to a widespread audience. But putting Bayley with the New Day to kind of introduce her on week two for people who might not know her from NXT or people who might not watch NXT or maybe have just heard of her, it's really, really smart, right? Because it's going to get her like hugging them and being into it. And she got the pinfall victory. And it seemed like the crowd was really engaged with Bayley. And I liked seeing that a lot.
I said to David that I genuinely believe that how they've treated her and presented her in the first 2 weeks is better than I could have ever hoped they would.
Yeah.
Like, they have booked her to perfection, I think. From my perspective, I think she's been great. I am very excited about where she goes going forward.
I'm very excited about it too. And thank you for giving me the chance to talk about that, because I've been so excited about it and didn't think I would actually get to express that here on Inside the Ropes.
There we go. So back to SmackDown, where your loyalty lies.
Yes.
Not that fucking Raw show with that Bayley pish, you know?
Yeah, whatever.
So, SmackDown Live from Dallas. We open up with footage of Talking Smack from last week with the Miz and Daniel Bryan segment. And then we cut backstage to Bryan and Shane. And Shane says, you know... and Shane said, you know, Bryan, like, you need to give Miz an apology. Like, you shouldn't get out that way in front of the talent.
Bryan, I am a McMahon and also no fun.
But then he did say, you know, I agree with you, but, you know, we just can't do that. And then Bryan said, well, maybe I just won't be so honest next time. But I do find that advice ironic, come from the guy who has beef with Brock Lesnar.
Boom.
But the thing is, the difference is, Shane McMahon, like, Daniel Bryan was allowed to get the one up on him.
Which was kind of cool, right?
That's the key. Like, Shane can do that if Bryan's going to get the retort. It's fine to do it that way if you're going to let it play out of that. So I thought it was good because, like, to be honest, you know, like, Shane as the corporate guy should be saying you can't speak to Miz like that because Miz is the Intercontinental Champion, and the stuff that Bryan was saying was kind of out of line for an authority figure to say.
It was, and Bryan absolutely acknowledged that, and he acknowledged it again on Talking Smack, actually.
So, but I think it's good that Shane and Bryan were having that conversation, because I liked the fact that Shane was sort of calling out what he'd done, and then Bryan was like, okay, and then just called out what Shane did.
It kind of helped establish their roles, right?
Yeah,
because for a long time, it seems like we've gotten Shane and Daniel Bryan backstage just sort of playing the same role. Like, they could essentially be one person. And it does give me pause because I'm not a fan of authority figure storylines. I know you love authority figure storylines. Like, I prefer not having a lot of authority figure storylines unless they're done very, very well. And it seems a lot of the time that, like, authority figure drama just sort of takes over from actual wrestling stories, and that's what makes me worry. But in this sense, I do like that they're establishing their roles and they're establishing that they're different people, because for a while it seems like they've just sort of been Shane and Daniel Bryan, like,
yeah,
Bryan and Shane, like, they could just be one person, right? And they don't feel like one person anymore necessarily, and I don't know where that goes, and I almost kind of hope it doesn't really go much of anywhere, at least until, like, I just have to resign myself to the fact that we're probably going to get Shane McMahon versus Brock Lesnar at some point. But
can't you just resign yourself to the fact that you're going to get to see Shane McMahon getting suplexed about 12 times?
And that's pretty exciting. So I am excited about that.
Sandra, you're just the worst wrestling fan.
I am not the worst wrestling fan.
You just disagree with everything that I like in wrestling. Like, I don't like authority figures. I don't like old guys. I don't like The Rock. I don't like The Undertaker.
Yeah, because I like when the wrestling talent that's presented to me on a daily basis that I fall in love with actually gets to tell stories and do good wrestling. Oh, I am the worst wrestling fan. I want to see good wrestling matches.
That's what makes you the worst. That's what makes you the worst, because you're right. That's the worst part about it.
I know, that's what you hate the most. You're like, oh, Sandra just advocates for good matches and not guys who can barely move anymore. Like, what's her problem?
Don't you dare speak about people like that.
I didn't even name names. I'm being a good person.
We know what you meant. Okay. The Miz came out. looking very fired up, wants his music cut. Wearing probably the best suit I've ever seen.
It was a
great
wrestling
suit. Show. Like, that was... I want to get the name of his tailor. Like, because I really want to get a suit of that. He's coming
probably
out with
very expensive.
It is, but it looks very nice. So he comes out with Maryse. He's, again, just very sort of aggressive about the fact that, you know, 148-day reign, he was going to restore the prestige of the belt, calling the fans serial losers, talking about soft style, saying the fans don't know what it's like in the back. He's kind of shooting a little bit. And Dolph Ziggler comes out. And initially, I groaned. That was my initial reaction.
Mine too.
Oh, Dolph Ziggler. And then he came out, and then they had a back and forth. And, you know, Ziggler's talking about, you know, Miz is content with holding up the facade, and he just wants to be famous, and he doesn't really want to be a wrestler. So prove that he's not a coward. Have a fight right now. No title shot, no referees, no nothing. Just have a fight right now. Prove he's not a coward. Miz circles him, takes off his jacket, but then tries to bail. And like...
No, he tries to bail and then takes off his jacket, then almost gets back in the ring, then
yeah,
bails
then,
again. And then Ziggler calls him out, and then Maryse has to get in between them and say, like, no, you don't... You know, whatever she was saying to him, I don't actually know. But Maryse was the one who had to talk him down.
Yeah, because eventually he was going to come in.
Yeah.
And Maryse had to talk about it. But the thing is, by the end of the segment, I was like, I'm really into this. And
same.
I don't really know why.
I do find it really interesting that Dolph Ziggler is the one calling Miz out and saying, you have to prove yourself. Like, what did you just not do, Dolph Ziggler? Like, wasn't your whole thing, no, I'm going to win because I need to prove myself that I'm more than just a show off, that I can win this title. And you lost. And now you're calling out The Miz to prove himself, The Miz who has that championship on his shoulder. You're calling him out? Really? That's interesting. But I'm into this. And I've seen so many Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz matches, right? Like, how many city themed street fights have they had? How many trick or street fights have they had?
They had the chicken thing recently.
And Miz called that out in his promo, which I thought was really, really interesting. Because part of his promo was, who do they call to do media appearances? Who do they call to do talk shows? Who do they call to dress up like a chicken to promote KFC? They call me. And I'm the one here day in and day out. I am so on the Miz's side here.
Yeah, well, the great heels have a modicum of the truth.
Yeah.
And I really like this story, and I'll be honest, I really hope the story ends with The Miz beating Dolph Ziggler, because I think that's got much more legs in it than Ziggler winning the title from. Like, this is really good. Like, The Miz is really, really good right now, and I think that they should capitalize on it. It was intense, and I was intrigued by it.
I think the way they're handling it is very smart, because they downplayed the Daniel Bryan portion of this, and I think they needed to. Like, they had Daniel Bryan address it on Talking Smack, and they did play him talking to Daniel Bryan, but they're not playing it as The Miz versus Daniel Bryan here. They're playing it as The Miz has a point to prove.
Yeah, but the thing is, they could, as much as I wanted to see Daniel Bryan and The Miz discussing it on SmackDown, like, that's only going to make me want to see Daniel Bryan and The Miz.
Well, and that's the thing, and they can't do that, because that's just not an option, right? And so I think The way they're playing it off is actually perfect, because they're playing it more to build up The Miz rather than to play off The Miz versus Daniel Bryan. And I think it's kind of a subtle difference, but I really like the way they're playing it, because The Miz does have a point to prove, and I want to see him prove it. And even though I'm probably not supposed to be cheering for him, because he did eventually bail, and Maryse eventually convinced him to bail and be a coward like Dolph Ziggler said he was. Oh boy, am I so into The Miz. And I've been a Miz fan for a long time. Like, I've been a Miz fan for a while. You can attest to this. Like, before this promo, I've been saying, like, no, The Miz is so good. He's so good. He's so good. I really like that they're giving him something to sink his teeth into, especially because he is Intercontinental Champion. And that's another thing he called attention to, right? Like, everybody's talking about the new titles, why is nobody talking about the Intercontinental Championship, a championship that once held prestige, but he's going to bring prestige back to it. I just love everything about this.
Yeah, it was really good, and they're going to face off at Backlash for the Intercontinental Championship.
It's officially, because Daniel Bryan did make that match official on Talking Smack.
He did. So it's going to happen, and I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be a really good match. I'm keen for it. But then we got the beginning of the... No, sorry, we got the continuation of the first round of the Tag Team Championship Tournament, where we got the Hype Bros against the Vaude Villains. They had a decent enough match. I thought it was fine.
It was fine. It was short, and the implications of it kill my soul a little bit.
Well, I was going to say, from my point of view, you know, so I watched the match and I'm going, okay, fine. And then the Hype Bros have a post-match interview where essentially Ryder said that the hype train had left the station. Raleigh basically just like looked like he just like put his face in like a cave of coke, and then
that is Mojo Raleigh in a nutshell. Yeah,
talked about, like, you know, staying hyped and all that shite.
Because we don't get hype, we stay hype. God, blah, blah, I hate you.
The thing that's intriguing is that Zack Ryder was actually doing pretty well earlier on this year, and I feel bad for him because he's been lumbered in this absolute shiter of a team. But you know, I get it. I get that the Hype Bros are going through. I hope that the Vaude Villains get a chance to do something else or try to rebuild what they're going to be.
I hope so. Like, do you think they're going to stop punishing them soon?
Here's the thing for me. I don't think the Vaude Villains, as they were in NXT, would work as a main roster act. I don't think they would.
No, but I think they were better on the main roster than they were in NXT.
True, but I think in terms of for a long term, I think they need to tweak the gimmick. Not get rid of it, but tweak it. I don't know how they tweak it, but I think if they don't tweak it, it's going to remain that they become like the jobber tag team.
And well, at this point, given how they've been presented, I don't know if the Vaude Villains can really... I mean, anyone can be rehabilitated, right? Like, we've seen that. Like, I'm into Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz right now.
That is the walking definition of rehabilitation.
So, I mean, they could rehabilitate the Dolph Villains? No, the Vaude Villains. They could rehabilitate them. I just don't know that they're going to. And I really, really, really love the Vaude Villains a lot. Like, Aiden English is one of my very favorites. So it just makes me sad for him, I guess.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, the Hype Bros are what they are. They are what they are. They're shite. Backstage, AJ Styles. Oh, God, I love him. Has got the headband on.
This was amazing. Like
a buffoon. And then he walks up to... He's
introducing himself to everyone and saying, hey. I'm AJ Styles. Hey, I'm the face that runs the place. You know me. You know who I am. Absolutely. not remembering Apollo Crews's name. Yes. Hey, guy whose name isn't important enough for me to remember, which is kind of great because it plays on the Daniel Bryan thing, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's where all of this comes from. So now Apollo Crews is a guy who is super concerned with his name and spelling. Because Apollo Crews is like, no, my name is Apollo Crews, C-R-E-W-S. And AJ Styles is like, oh, great, this is a spelling bee? Whatever. Like,
it's funny, like, that whole gag could not have worked better on anyone than you. Because you do debates and all that sort of stuff. So the spelling bee thing was great for you.
It made me so happy. I did spelling bees as a child, whatever. Like, it was a thing.
I'm not judging it. I'm just saying it was a gag that targeted you because you'd done it.
Yeah, I did.
AJ Styles then comes out and down to the ring. He's got the Cena headband on, obviously, and he's sort of cutting a promo about how, you know, he beat John Cena at SummerSlam. He's going to be the champion. And Apollo Crews interrupts him and basically said that he went to Daniel Bryan and got permission to have a match with AJ Styles. They have a match. The match is pretty good, enjoyable. And in the end, Styles hit the phenomenal forearm for the win on Apollo Crews. I want to bring up a quick thing. David McCutcheon had, I think he was talking to you and somebody else on Twitter, and he had mentioned as an example of Apollo Crews and where he could go about, you know, where Big E was at one point, or where Xavier Woods was at one point, where Kofi Kingston was. The problem for me is that I've not seen any personality from Apollo Crews at any point.
Until tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being very generous giving him personality. I mean, I think he's, I'll grant you this. I think that the match with AJ Styles was good for him. But I'm still, I just think he's very bland, and I don't know what he does. I think he's the sort of guy that, like, back in the day, they would do these, like, vignettes where they would go somewhere and do something. Maybe he benefits from something like that.
Jamaica?
I don't know if you need to send him to Jamaica.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, you mentioned Kofi Kingston. Like, that's how he started, right? Like, terrible true. Jamaica vignettes that never paid off.
But, like, I mean, like, no, I mean more like, you know, they would send Chris Jericho to Washington to go to, like, the Supreme Court to try and get...
To be a conspiracy victim. I have seen those, actually. Exactly. I love
like stuff like that is really good. So I don't know if there's something you can do with Apollo Crews from a babyface perspective that could do that. All I'm saying is, like, for me, as a wrestling fan, I couldn't care less if you are a 5-star wrestler or a 3-star wrestler. My interest is more about the character. Always has been, always will be. And I just don't have anything to get excited about with Apollo Crews yet. So I'm hoping that maybe this... But even then, like, I mean, all he does is smile.
He does, but I feel like this was a start, though, right? Because he has kind of an edge to him now. He has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because after Daniel Bryan called him Apollo Creed, and after... like he got called Apollo Creed by The Miz, right? Yeah. Because it's really sad that I had to think about that. But I mean, after The Miz was like, no, you're Apollo Creed, blah, 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 blah. And Apollo Crews is like, no, I'm Apollo Crews, bitch. And now the fact that AJ Styles is disrespecting him and saying, like, I can't be bothered to learn your name. It gives Apollo Crews something. And I'm not saying it gives Apollo Crews something to be the most interesting man in the world right away, but it gives him something to latch onto so that in the next few weeks, maybe we'll see it build. Maybe we won't. Maybe I'm delusional. I don't know. But and part of this is personal, right? Because I grew up being called Sandra my entire life. I got called Sandra by everyone. I mean, sometimes it would morph into Sarah. I got called Tanya once. Like, I mean, I didn't think the name Sandra was that difficult. It's S-O-N-D-R-A. It's very phonetic. It's Sandra. It's like, what is your problem, world? But everyone calls me Sandra.
Can we just rename you Tanya for Inside the Ropes?
No, we sure can't, because my name is Sandra, damn it all.
Tanya's so good. Tanya. Welcome to the SmackDown Summit with Kenny and like Tanya. When
Robert called me Sandra Ross Weasel Dick Frankenstein.
That was one of the better ones.
That was my favorite
you
one.
You do
actually
have a mental name though. Come
well,
on.
Well, it's really long. But
it's too long.
Well, I mean, I was born Sandra Ruth Wesseldyke. What do you want me to do?
Well, I mean, can we not just take some parts of some of the words and make it a shorter thing?
I just call myself Sandra. I just became Sandra.
What, you like Cher?
Yeah, why not?
I do introduce you as that most thing. But back to the point.
I'm just saying that I think Apollo Crews, guy concerned with spelling, is interesting to me because
that's what you're saying. Like, you're now saying that the interesting part of Apollo Crews is that he cares about spelling.
Yes, he does, because he went to the announce table during the match and said, see that? I gave him a punch. P-U-N-C-H. Punch.
Fucking hell.
I love this.
Do you know what? I will say to you what I said to David. I would love nothing more than to be proved wrong. I just don't think I'm going to in the short term, but I hope that I am.
But I think I'm not saying that this is the most amazing gimmick right away.
Good.
Like, it's amazing for me because I super love it, but
it's amazing to you in like an NXT redemption.
Absolutely, 100% yes.
God, I hate how much I know you.
You know me very, very well. It's amazing to me in the same way as Emma did a thing with her arms, right? Ty Dillinger holds up a perfect 10 hands thing. Like, this is, these are the sorts of things that just kind of rope me in. I love it. I'm not ashamed to love these things 100%. But I think that it is indicative of the fact that Apollo Crews now has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and he lost this match to AJ Styles. And I think something that you said last week to me, by last week, I mean like a couple days ago, but you said that like him losing to The Miz or whatever, like, it could be interesting because now he has to react to that loss, right? And he has to kind of come back from behind and he has to kind of prove himself. And I kind of feel like that's what he's doing.
Is he though?
Because yeah.
I feel like he's not even acknowledged the loss to The Miz.
I feel like him getting this chip on his shoulder about his name and about trying to challenge AJ Styles, like, why would he challenge AJ Styles otherwise?
Like, because AJ Styles came up to him and was a dick to him.
True, but I feel like maybe this loss to AJ Styles after AJ Styles was a dick to him and now he lost, I feel like it gives him opportunity to maybe grow as a character. And again, like, I don't know if he's actually going to grow as a character because I don't know what they're going to do next week. But I am a little bit more interested to see if they do something next week. And I'll say that for it. So,
okay, well, we will reconvene next week to see where that goes.
And I really hope he keeps spelling words.
So then we cut to...
Like, remember when Ryback used to type and, like, be an internet troll? I loved that, too.
I did love that. It was good. Then we cut...
And this was a good match, and Apollo Crews showing himself in matches, being a good wrestler and having entertaining matches, I think is the best way to get Apollo Crews some variety.
I like the match. I thought the match was good.
So, that's what I'll say.
My problem with Apollo Crews has never been his in-ring work.
Right. But I think his in-ring work was better here because he had a little bit of an edge about him because he was upset with AJ Styles.
Maybe, I'll rewatch it. Maybe I was watching it at 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning, so... Maybe I'll rewatch that part. Renee Young is conducting an interview at the home of Heath Slater. It was a redneck single wide trailer. His wife was a heavyset blonde woman
with terrible eyeshadow.
With questionable eyeshadow.
Terrible.
She then was now so. Picture the scene, ladies and gentlemen. Renee Young is sitting at the table with Heath Slater.
Renee Young had great eyeshadow, by the way.
Well, she was sitting next to fucking Bertha Faye. I mean, of course she's going to look better.
I don't know who that is.
Google's your friend, Sandra.
Okay.
So Rhino's there, of course. And
looking like out the window because he's very focused.
And the heavyset blonde wife decides to feed them lunch. So she feeds them crackers, canned cheese.
I won't lie, I was very tempted to go out and buy Easy Cheese after the segment. It sounded really good.
And little sausages. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you know this, Sandra, but like the idea of canned cheese.
I know how you feel about fake United States cheese, Kenny, because it prevented you from seeing a Broadway show.
Well, let's not go into that. But like,
you've gotten
into
it before.
But what I'm saying is, and this is not just me. Like, if you're listening to this, ladies and gentlemen, and you're from the UK, please tweet me or tweet us and just confirm for me. Canned cheese is a fucking terrible idea. Cheese in a can. Like, and it's not cheese. It's not cheese.
It's a cheese byproduct.
Yeah. In a can.
I still have to take lactate to eat it.
Listen, well, that's also wrong. That's like, you should not need to take any pill to eat cheese in a can. Like, because you shouldn't be eating cheese in a can. So she's serving this monstrosity of a snack. Renee Young, funnily enough, is able to, you know, stop herself from
Did you notice Baby Rhino making faces on the crackers?
He was.
And he made, I swear the first face he made was a smiley face, like, because you didn't see the cracker itself, but you saw him, like, making the face. But the second one they focused on, and he made a sad face because Heath Slater was sad about stuff. I love everything about this segment.
Is the wife then told him they would be
Beulah is her name.
Beer Rat.
Beulah. Beer Rat.
So what is her name? Say again.
Beulah, like Beulah McGillicuddy.
Oh, Beulah. Oh, so it was Beulah, sorry.
Yeah, not Beer Rat.
That's what it sounded like you said. These are my friends, Heath and Beer Rat.
That'd be kind of amazing, to be honest.
And then there's their friend Tanya that's with them.
Oh, gosh.
So basically she then said that they'd be eating pizza crusts for dinner. Heath was talking about, like, embarrassing moments, getting track of the contract, mistaking Shane for Stephanie, which is still one of my favorite moments.
He apologized. He got their beards confused between Brian and Mick Foley.
Renee asked Rhino the tough questions. Why is he Heath's partner? He just shrugged as he ate canned cheese.
And crackers and mini sausages.
Yep. Slater then ran outside when he heard tire screeches because his kids had apparently stolen a vehicle.
His kids, who were out back collecting cans and bottles.
And then...
Which is that just a very American reference? Like, I don't know how much the bottle deposit is in West Virginia, but, like, in Michigan, if you collect cans and bottles and stuff, that's 10 cents a can. Like, I think it's only 5 cents there, but still. That's money. What I mean.
That's a way to make 11.
Yeah.
Rhino then gave Renee very creepy looks, and the segment closed as Renee went to leave. Here's the thing. This was mental.
Yes.
But I did love it.
I'm glad. I was really hoping you would love it and not hate it, because our friendship might have been called into question.
It was so much fun.
Like, and admit, you watched this and you were like, Sandra is gonna fucking love this.
Oh yeah, because I know you can't watch it live, and I was just watching it going, oh god, like, this is so up her alley, it's not even funny.
I think it was, like, Adam Ferguson tweeted me at work and was like, I'm not gonna spoil anything, but there's a segment going on right now that you will absolutely love. And I assume that, Adam, you were talking about this particular segment, because yes, I did love it.
And I'll be controversial. I don't think Heath Slater was that great here. I think he was probably the least effective part of it. What really, because he wasn't very sort of like over the top, which is usually his thing, right?
He was quite understated. But he was in his home. He was relaxed.
But his wife was really good. And then Rhino was tremendous. And Renee trying to, like, cope with it all was great. So Heath kind of got to just be a little bit different than he usually is.
It's weird because I feel like the wife took away from it for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I feel like she added, because, like, without it, I feel like it was Heath. Like, the whole thing that gets me about Heath Slater is he's a bit over the top. That's what I like about him. And, like, when he was being quite, like, serious about, like, you know, his family and all that stuff, like, that's where you kind of lose me a little bit, because I really want to see, like, I want him to go full hog with Heath Slater. Like, when they got to the end and he had the tire thing and he ran off, like, that, again, I was like, right, that's great, that's Heath Slater again.
Well, the thing is, we know he doesn't have all these kids. Like, that's the disingenuous part of Heath Slater.
Sandra, let's... Don't be accusing the man of not having children that he
says. No, I'm just saying, like, this Beulah woman, she's like, oh, I wish you could meet our kids. Like, and well, it's clearly, like, when she runs into his arms at the beginning, he's like, no, like, play it down a little bit. Like, this is all so disingenuous. It's so great, right? Like, this is Heath Slater absolutely playing up this whole thing and, like, his camouflage tabletop and telling Renee, like, oh, yeah, here's where you can get this. And Renee's like, yeah, maybe we'll check that out after the interview.
It was
can you imagine Renee and Dean Ambrose having that tabletop in their home?
God, I can't believe Renee Young can stand to be around Dean Ambrose.
I can't either.
Then we got Bray Wyatt making his entrance. He was, you know, talking about Randy fight with Brock Lesnar, and he went into it without fear, thought he was untouchable, came out with damage, all that sort of stuff. Orton comes out and interrupts. Orton was kind of, he's been very different in the last couple of months than
I really
than I've been
like
used
Orton.
To.
Right.
Yeah, like he's actually a really good part of SmackDown, and he was kind of talking about Wyatt and that he has his attention and he's been damaged for a long time and all that sort of stuff.
He referenced his Mick Foley match getting thrown.
He did.
Contacts. He mentioned Hell in a Cell with the Undertaker, which I didn't actually know happened. He referenced a lot of things, and I'll be honest, like, Kenny, you know Bray Wyatt's one of my favorites. Like, anyone who's listened to me talk on the show knows that Bray Wyatt's one of my favorites. I was way more into Randy Orton here than I was Bray Wyatt.
Yep, because Randy Orton's more compelling right now.
And Bray Wyatt's talking about how he is fear, and he is blah, 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 and he's gonna, you know, he is the Predator. Well, how's that worked out for you, Bray? Ever? Like, since you beat Daniel Bryan at Royal Rumble? Like, what have you done?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of anything. And that really pains me to say, because Bray Wyatt is actually one of my favorites. And I think he's so good at delivering these lines. And if I were just in a vacuum and had no experience with the character, then I'd be super compelled by Bray Wyatt. But
you know what? They had a good talking segment, and they've now settled the match for Backlash. Orton and Wyatt, I think it's going to be really, really good.
I'm still into the match. But I want to say, like, first of all, it's weird that Randy Orton wears trousers now. To the ring, like that, just it signifies a development in Randy Orton's character, I guess, because he's learned to put on pants. But like, I don't know, I'll just say, like, I'm kind of more into Randy Orton than I am into Bray Wyatt, and I'm not sure how to process that. But I mean, the promo by Bray Wyatt was very good.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was good. I liked Orton's part. I liked the back and forth. I liked the repartee, and I am excited for the match. We then got the women's division featured on the show. We got a tag team match with Becky Lynch and Naomi against Alexa Bliss and Natalia. We got Nikki Bella on commentary.
Why? Why was Nikki Bella on commentary?
Because she's part of the women's division.
So's Carmella. Why wasn't she on commentary? I know that the answer is so that she could attack Nikki Bella, but why did this happen?
Because her brother-in-law is the GM.
But that was never referenced. Like, this is my issue right now.
I don't think that's too much of an issue. In the sense of, like, Nikki Bella being in commentary makes sense. Like, Carmella, the character, why would she want to come out and talk? She's pissed off. She doesn't want to talk. And then she picks her spot to come out and destroy Nikki. Like, I really liked it. It worked for me. Like, I enjoyed, I thought the tag match was decent. Everybody in it's pretty competent. You know, even Naomi looked okay. Which is good, you know. And then I quite liked the heels getting the win, because I think they needed it more, if I'm honest.
I think just rang of a lot of red flags for me. Like, putting Nikki Bella on commentary just because she's like the veteran who's back, I guess, was maybe the rationale. I don't really know.
But then last week you had Naomi and Natalia on commentary,
which I also didn't like.
But like, I think it's fine. Like, I think what they're trying to do is, like, you know, they're trying to feature all the women,
and that is something I do like. So I kind of see both sides of it, right? Like, I get that they're trying to feature all the women, and I really do appreciate that they're getting TV time. Like, I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter about Summer Rae on Raw, for instance. Like, Summer Rae hasn't been on Raw since the draft that I can recall. And if she was on an episode, I apologize. But like, Summer Rae and Alicia Fox are on Raw, but we haven't really seen them. And that's something interesting about the SmackDown women's division, is that we've seen everybody, right? Like, because we've seen Natalia, we've seen Becky, we've seen Naomi, we've seen Alexa, we've seen Carmella, we've seen Nikki, we've seen Eva until she got so exhausted that she had to vacation in the British Isles for a month, completely unrelated to Adderall suspension. And I like that all the women are being featured, and I'll take it, but it just seems like this segment in particular was kind of like, okay, and then we're going to end it with a distraction roll up. And it just kind of rings a little too close to some of the other tropes that I really, really didn't like about the women's division when it was bad. And so maybe it's more just alarm bells going off in my head with lazy writing. But I think part of it is that we're in a little bit of a holding pattern, right? Like, we don't really have anything else to do. And so, like, I guess I'm just of two minds about it. Like, on one hand, I think it's kind of lazy writing. On the other hand, I'd rather they be featured on TV and just not kept off TV until Backlash, because there's really nothing to build, right? Because we have a six-pack challenge for Backlash. So there's really nothing to build interest in that match other than here are the women, they exist, look at them on the television. And something I really do like about this is that we do have a sub-story going on with Nikki Bella and Carmella, which rhymes and I can't get over that. But I like the fact that we're telling another story because we have the title out there, but until someone wins it, we're not really fighting over it because all of the women in the division are a part of that. So I think for me, like, I just have to accept at this point that we're in a bit of a holding pattern. And then next week on the Go Home show, we're probably going to have another thing that doesn't really build to Backlash, and it might frustrate me in a way. But we kind of just have to get to the point where someone has a title and then things will get more interesting. But I do like that the women are being featured. I do like that there's wrestling going on. And I do like that there's a sub story with Carmella and Nikki Bella, which makes me wonder if Nikki will win the title or if she will be cost the title and then start a secondary women's story with Carmella. And I think that would be my preference at this point.
I understand your viewpoint, but I do... Like, I enjoyed this stuff. I thought that this was... I actually thought that the women's stuff on this show was better than the women's stuff on Raw.
Okay.
So, I was cool with it. I was into it.
It's not that I'm not enjoying it, like, I'm angry about it or anything. I'm not going to go all ranty about it. But it's just... Mm-hmm. It didn't light my fire.
It's not going to be week one SmackDown summary ranty.
It's not going to be week one SmackDown summary ranting.
I'm curious to talk about this with you. The Headbangers.
I don't understand them.
Returned to the WWE. They had a nice video package sort of showing them back in their prime with the tag titles.
Nice video package. All they did was like...
Headbang.
Headbang without hair. How do headbangers not have hair?
You need to have hair to headbang.
You do.
No, you don't. You need to have hair. If you were like... you just need to have a head.
I guess, but I always pictured the headbangers with hair because, you know, you picture long haired guys being like, yeah, I'm headbanging and my hair's all in my face.
Now, you said on Twitter that you had some questions about the headbangers.
I have so many questions. Like, why do they exist is the first.
As in this tournament?
As in, why are they wearing kilts?
It's not kilts, it's skirts.
Okay, but they're plaid and they're skirts. Like, that's basically a kilt, right?
But that's what headbangers used to wear in the
mid-90s.
I mean, listen, my experience in headbanging is not what it once was. So I'm maybe the wrong guy to ask. But I thought it was a fun thing to bring them back.
I was very confused because I thought that one of them especially was wearing a kilt. And I was like, are they supposed to be Scottish? Like, the infographic said, from New Jersey, we're part of the Attitude Era.
No, that's the way it went in Sondra over. The thing for me was, like, I liked the idea of, like, Slater and Rhino are going through. We all know that. Let's just bring back a fun tag team. Like, let's bring back a former set of tag team champions and let them be in the tournament. Now, here's the thing. The Headbangers were in WWF from 1997. It is 19 years later.
And they kept talking about how it's been 16 years since they've been in a WWE ring. I was like, this is not endearing me to these guys.
But here's the thing. Mosh looks exactly the same. Mosh has not aged. Thrasher has. Mosh hasn't. How the fuck does Mosh still look so young? I don't understand. So that was something that concerned me. But I quite like them being in this position. I was very curious to see how the fans were going to react to them.
They didn't, basically.
They didn't react to them. But what was good about that was it just meant that Heath Slater and Rhino were going to get a better reaction.
Which was good, and I appreciated that. This actually reminded me a lot of when Too Cool came back at NXT Arrival to face the Ascension, because I didn't know who Too Cool were either. And it was just kind of, it was using a nostalgia act to kind of get a reaction and say like, oh yeah, like look, these guys who used to be here, and this is kind of fun for like the two people in the crowd who remember this. And, you know, that's neat, but we're going to advance the storyline of the current story of what's actually going on right now, as opposed to bringing back a nostalgia act and then saying, hey, no, these guys were important like a long time ago and they're still super important, so we're going to make them the main thing. So in the end, I appreciated this.
Yeah, and I thought the match was fun. I liked Slater and Rhino getting a win over a former set of tag team champions.
It was good. And, you know, again, like this kind of plays to my whole like, oh, well, should they really beat an established tag team when they're not a tag team? It's clear that Baby Rhino and Heath Slater did work together very hard over the week. I mean, Baby Rhino was at Heath Slater's home. They were working together.
They ate canned cheese together. But in the end, Rhino hit a gore on Mosh, and that was the end of it. And they, you know, advanced on to the semifinals of the tag team tournament. In terms of the main event of the evening, Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin. AJ Styles comes out on commentary.
Mm-hmm. He was great, by the way.
Explain to people what happened after that.
Well, are we talking about the milkman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I lost my spot in my notes for a second. Back on it. So,
to be fair, you do not need notes to remember this.
No, I don't. This was amazing. Okay, so we announced that Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin is going to be the main event of the evening, and then we cut back to the ring, and there's this man standing there. Just a man. He's very nondescript. And he says that he's been granted an opportunity to compete here tonight. His name is Gary the Milkman Millman, which is such a great name. But nobody is around to compete with him, and he's very upset. So then he begins to disrobe in the middle of the ring.
Because that's what you do when you're angry. You've not got a point. You just start stripping.
You just start stripping. And so he takes off his shoes, and he takes off his shirt, and he takes off his pants until he's just standing there in his underwear. And this is when you know that I've been talking to you too much, because I almost just said he takes off his pants until he's standing there in his pants. But he's standing there in his underwear, his tidy whities, as commentary is, you know, gleeful to point out, basically. And then whose music hits but the Demon Kane. The Demon Kane comes to avenge us or something, and comes to show his dominance over Gary the Milkman Millman. So on this episode of SmackDown, we had a milkman disrobe in the middle of the ring. And seriously, how wonderful and weird is wrestling? I just love it.
Yep, it was bizarre, but I...
Kane chokeslams the guy, he leaves, whatever.
Yeah, Kane chokeslams the milkman.
But Kane is back. I am kind of a big Kane fan, so...
Well, enjoy him while you can.
You know, until he goes to be a libertarian politician or whatever. Like, I enjoy the sporadic Kane appearances. I think since he stopped being on TV all the time, like, when Kane does appear, I get kind of excited about it now.
I mean, the thing is, like, I would one day like to see Kane and Daniel Bryan together backstage, like Director of Operations Kane with GM Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, Corporate Kane and GM Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, that would be good. So we got Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin. Now, you saw Baron Corbin's journey in NXT.
I did.
You're also not a fan of Dean Ambrose.
No.
Baron Corbin did get a DQ victory here, so they did protect him.
Because AJ Styles kicked Baron Corbin.
Yeah,
but seemingly inadvertently, like maybe he was going for Dean Ambrose. We don't really know.
But the key is they did protect him.
Yeah, they did.
What did you think of the match?
It was as good as a Dean Ambrose match is going to be.
Okay, so another week that he's not won you over.
Nope.
Yeah, I am.
Baron Corbin was way better than Dean Ambrose here. I'm sorry. Like, I just, I'm so not into Dean Ambrose. Like, there's nothing that Dean Ambrose has done to make me think that he's really super great at being champion. And I mean, everything AJ Styles said on commentary, everything AJ Styles did, I don't really understand why AJ Styles decided to get involved in the match, because at the very beginning of the match, he did make mention, you know, that he wanted Baron Corbin to soften up Dean Ambrose, and that he was like, yeah, just beat the shit out of him because I have to fight him in 2 weeks for the championship. And then I think it was JBL was like, oh, well, why would you need him to be softened up, because you're good enough to beat him anyway? And AJ was like, yeah, I know, you're right. But AJ Styles should still want this match to continue. Like, I don't know why he got involved on the apron when it could just continue and Baron Corbin could continue beating the shit out of Dean Ambrose, because Baron Corbin had the upper hand for the most part.
Yes. It's funny. I, like, when I looked at this show, I actually think the main event was the weakest part of the show.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think the key is that next week they've really got to sell Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles. And I don't think there's been, AJ Styles has been selling it, but I don't think there's really been a money exchange yet with them. And there needs to be. They need to do something next week. They need to do something to make people more invested in that match. That is what is needed. And I hope that they do it. SmackDown this week, would you give a thumbs up, a thumbs in the middle, or a thumbs down?
I'd give it a thumbs up. I enjoyed it. I mean, how am I going to give a thumbs down to something with Baby Rhino making faces with easy cheese on a cracker? It's not going to happen.
Put it this way. This is a compliment I'm going to give it. Had this show not had The Miz or Slater and Rhino, this would have a thumbs down for me, this show.
Okay.
Not that it wasn't like a terrible show, but without those two things, I don't think I would have a great... No, thumbs down is too harsh. Probably thumbs in the middle. But Miz and Slater and Rhino put it to a thumbs up for me.
I like how you're sneakily trying to get me to rate things without actually rating them.
I'm not. It's just, there's just a thumb. It's just whatever you're putting your thumb.
Where are you putting your thumb? I don't know.
Oh, Sandra.
It's just the way you phrased that was very sketchy.
Tanya, don't talk about
that. Don't call me Tanya.
Okay, well, I want to thank everyone for listening to the SmackDown Summary. We are back on a regular schedule, getting them out quicker to you. And then obviously next weekend, I am led to believe the return of Robert Duffin will happen when we talk about Backlash. So that should be good. Sandra, where can people find you on the Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW.
Mm-hmm.
And find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Was I supposed to continue this?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Not that you needed me to repeat that, because everybody follows you anyway. And follow Inside the Ropes on Twitter at Inside_the Ropes. And also, check out our YouTube content at youtube.com/The Inside Network.
Yeah, we're going to have new content going up there tonight. We're going to have the full Noam Dar interview from a couple of weeks ago going up there. Get some video content coming up soon as well. If I wanted to go and see Jim Ross and Jim Cornette in London, or I wanted to see Cody Rhodes in Manchester, where could I go to get tickets for that, Sandra?
Interesting you ask. You could go to insidetheropes.co.uk to buy tickets for all of those shows, which should be fantastic. Because when are you ever going to get another opportunity to see Jim Ross and Jim Cornette in the same arena together answering questions about the rise of the Attitude Era? Like, an era that they built. Like, everyone loves the Attitude Era. Like, find out how it came about from two of the main people involved in it, right? Both named Jim. Go see the Jims. It'll be great. And also, is Cody Rhodes not completely amazing? Yes, he is. Obviously, you want to hear him talk.
Sandra has sold it beautifully, so I am going to leave. Thank you very much for listening to the SmackDown Summary. We will be back next week with episode number 7. Stay classy, listeners.
Yep.
What?
It's just, I haven't watched Anchorman in a long time, and I love that movie. It makes me want to turn it on.
What a glass cage of emotion.
Milk was a bad choice.
Okay, I'm Milk was a bad choice. I'm just one man, but I'm the one man back.